Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Foch's Corner on a very busy week in mid-January. Alongside Coach Phony Bennett, T-Dubs all the way out west in Cali, Dougie Fresh Smith in Jersey, I'm Mark Jerome in the heart of New York City. Coach, crazy, busy, hectic week. So much going on.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about tonight, but it's been a good week, I think, for Hoos fans, for the fans of the men's team, at least. So it'll be a nice, positive show, I think.
T-Dubs, what are we starting with? Any idea?
Pillar player. The first one, pillar player of the game, Casey Morsell. How nice was it to see him?
Wow, nice.
Come back.
I am so happy for him because the way last year went, and you know, when a kid gets in his head, like each shot that he misses, the next one becomes even harder. And so, you know, I was worried about this layoff or however long that layoff ended up being for him. So to see him come out like he did and hopefully have that confidence, because he's shown himself to be a bit of a shot creator. And if he can, also just make the open shot or make even the contested shot, he had one step back yesterday, and I can't remember who highlighted it, but man, it was just beautiful. Just happy for Casey.
If he ultimately has a good career, what a great story this would be.
Right. I mean, he showed flashes of it, right? That's usually the case. You get more consistent as you go on.
Yep.
Yeah, his trajectory has been good. I mean, he's been shooting better so far this year, I think, than he did last year. And then obviously 3-for-3 from three yesterday helped, 6-of-7 for the game. Just exciting because he has some quiet athleticism that he shows off that isn't always evidence. But, man, when he puts it on the floor, he can make some things happen too. So
I'm going to add a little controversy to this. My boys in D.C. are talking about he should transfer.
And yeah, everybody says that.
And why is that? Is it a minutes thing? Is it a coaching thing?
Fit? Yeah, is it fit?
So, but Dougie, people ask if he's going to transfer. Everybody doesn't say he should transfer.
Right. Oh, right. No, I get it. I'll tell you what, it's funny. We always talk about not having minutes when you're young and how that can mess with your head. He's been thrust in a situation where he's played a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
And by the same token, you have a lot more opportunities, a lot more things. So that maybe can mess with you too, right? Because, you know, if you have 5 minutes a game, you might get a shot attempt. You might get two. He's playing 20, 25 minutes. So he's got to produce. And I've just seen it the last two games he's played. I don't care about points. I don't care about the assists. I do care about turnovers and defense. The way he's walking around the court and his demeanor is next level. And
body language is positive.
He looks like, you know, he was a 6'3 guy that looked like he was 6 foot before. And now he's a 6'3 guy that looks like he's 6'5. Because he's walking around, the body language, his chest is out. He's stalking the court, and I like it. So
he's looking. As long as he's in the right headspace, I mean, then I think he's going to be successful. He came in so ready-made, I think, for Tony's system and for what Virginia does. And to see him struggle as much as he did last year. The only reason I could see him transferring is if he can't pull out of it and he thinks everyone's turned on him and he just needs a fresh start.
Well, he would.
I'm never going to want him to transfer because I'm always going to believe he's going to turn it around.
Yeah, I think a guy like that would transfer is if they say I could play 40 minutes a game wherever and score 20 a game at this school, which is pipe dream's a bad word for it, but I don't have a better word. Grass is greener, or I'm going to be better against lesser players type thing.
So, okay, T-Dubs, I'm sorry.
If he's getting minutes and he's getting it consistently, it'd be hard to transfer, I think.
Unless you want a different system.
All right. Yeah. But how many times has that really happened? I mean, I guess Mariel, Darius, the only two for UVA. I mean, it's only happened a couple times.
And those guys, I think you could look at them and say they're not fits for the system. I've not seen anything from Casey that said he doesn't fit this system, that his game is well cut out for this.
So, Dougie, as someone that's played at such a high level and a level I would dreamed about playing at, and when I played small Division I and being on ESPN every night, what is he not doing and what does he need to do or what is he starting to do? Right. And I know you talk about the body language. Now you talk about the little things, but what wasn't he doing before, and what does he have to do consistently to like to become a really, really good player in the history of UVA?
Fresh just stepped away for a minute.
Yeah, Fresh.
Well, you know what, T-Dubs, you can answer that too. I was actually going to throw that at you or Dougie, because you are the historian of UVA basketball.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day, and like if you look at players that have transferred and gone on to become all ACC, the flip side is how many guys have not gotten minutes or played very sparingly and then turned around and turned into all ACC caliber players. Historically speaking, there maybe one or two. I mean, generally your first year, you need to show some sign of life. Unless you're redshirted, right? I think there's a few cases where it's happened, but for him, I think it's just consistency. If he can do this, like we saw last year, Arizona State, Mohegan Sun, he was driving to lanes, playing great defense. He was doing his thing. It's like every year we get a little more. Like J.R. Reynolds, same deal. He'd have a couple of bad games. He'd have one great game, but you saw the great game. And it's like the guys by their fourth year were consistent and they became all ACC. What I have, my question for you guys is, guys like Jabri and Carson McCorkle, should we be concerned? What, they're not getting any burn. Do they have a chance to turn into all ACC caliber players? I mean, given this, you could say this is a redshirt year for them, but yeah, like that's kind of where I was going. But yeah, you know,
I mean, the concerns are the rules, right? If you can go right away wherever you want to go and you can play the next year, that's the concern.
Yeah,
it's not a bigger picture concern. Can they develop and become, you know, the next Ty Jerome, Kyle guy? Sure, but you know, it's not their first years in a coronavirus season where nothing's consistent. You know,
right.
They didn't get the summer. We've talked about it. They miss so much development with the players that at the next level,
right,
through the summer and in preseason, that it's tough to calculate that stuff. So,
well, and what's difficult for a guy like Jabri is looking into next year. It's not like there's minutes that are opening,
right?
Exactly.
He's going to have to earn them. Not that anything's ever handed to anyone in this program, but it's just one more thing that makes that climb a little bit steeper for him.
Here's my prediction on that, T-Dubs. I think for McCorkle, don't have to be concerned unless somebody's going to say, okay, comes at him and says, hey, here's an opportunity to play 4 years at this school, and which may not be at the highest level. And we don't know how good he is, right? I mean, there's only rumors or information that we've received from the coaches or from whoever we've spoken with, right? Yep. But I don't think he transfers a kid like that. I think there is reason to be concerned about Jabri. It's transferring. How good is he? We don't know that either.
Yeah.
Maybe it's okay if he transfers for him to go down another level or to play somewhere somewhat comparable, right? I mean, the rumors are out there.
Yeah.
Where he's going to transfer to, if he's going to transfer, you know, who he's talking to, right?
I mean, if he doesn't think he can earn minutes, like I never fault anyone that transfers. If you don't think you're getting the minutes, you don't like your fit, you should get out, right? I mean, why power through it if that's how you're going to feel? Because it doesn't help anyone if you're going to be the eighth man when you feel like you're the second man. It's not going to help. Like, camaraderie, it's not going to help team chemistry. It's not going to do anything good for anyone. So you might as well bounce and go where, you know, go get happy, as Will Smith said, in pursuit of happiness, right? But maybe that's the wrong approach, but that's how I've always looked at it.
I hope. I mean, I hope he does enough. I hope he sticks around and does enough in the summer to get minutes. I mean, that's the best outcome for everybody.
Yeah, it's kind of like, do you have the confidence in yourself to just be like, no, screw that, I'm better, I'm gonna earn minutes. I don't care what anyone says. Like, that's almost the mentality you need, which is hard. That's a lot to ask, right? Because you have people talking in your ear and this and that. You hear rumors just like anyone else. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other coaches have to see, okay, this guy was a high recruit and he's not getting a lot of minutes. They're going to smell blood in the water. But, you know, at the same time, that happens at every school. I mean, you see that at Kentucky. I mean, minutes have to be earned. You know, look at Duke, Henry Coleman. Like, I thought Henry Coleman, if he came here, would be getting big minutes in his first year. He's played a total of 12 minutes for Duke so far this season.
Right. Crazy. But either way, happy for Casey. we took the Casey Marcel thing a different route. But pillar of the game, he's, you know.
And since we're talking individual players, let's shout out Kihei for his play these last couple games. He has been so good as a facilitator, which I think first and foremost, that's where his value is to this team primarily, is when he's creating for others. And that ends up giving him these scoring opportunities. And he's just been so good at that. And I love about Kihei that, I mean, the play he will always be remembered for is an assist. It's not a bucket. It's an assist. It just happens to be the best assist in college basketball history. You know, when he's doing that, we are such a better team. And he's been such a great leader out there. And really, I think, has cemented himself as the leader of this team.
Yeah, I like seeing him. I know a lot of – there's just always gripe about Kihei for whatever reason. But seeing him get into the paint and make things happen, I mean, that's – what we need, right? He gets in there. It may not be always look amazingly beautiful and pretty in any shape, but he gets it done, and he's the spark plug that we need. Which,
yeah, and maybe Zach can chart this, but it seems like this season, certainly these last few games, when he takes it into the paint, he's got a pass in mind. And right. And because he's passing it more now, that's creating more opportunities because the defense has to worry about the lanes and
right.
You know, so now he's getting some scoring opportunities where before he never seemed to have a plan B. He was going in to try to lay it up against, you know, two guys who are each a foot taller than him.
Right.
And that's not going to work out well quite frequently. But, yeah. You know, now because he's passing more, I think it gives him more opportunities, you know, and he's making good decisions. I'd love to see.
Yeah. I wonder what the points per position when Kihei does get in the lane. That includes his posting up. I love the post up. I mean, it's really effective. I mean, it works. The other, speaking of post up, the other one we should mention, Sam Hauser. We talked about it pregame, during the game. Like, let's keep posting him up and try to force the other team to double him. He's been great. Really finding a groove, so to speak. Right? Is that?
Yeah, he's just got such nice moves. And what, his mid-range game, what were they saying? He's like 60% on mid-range jumpers.
63%. That's crazy.
He was one rebound shy of his fourth double-double in a row. I mean, he's turning into the player that we were all promised that he would be.
right. You
know, based on what people saw at Marquette, which maybe isn't the player that we expected him to be. We expected him to be an improved version of himself. And so I think we're starting to see that. And that bodes really well as we start to get into the real meat of the ACC schedule.
Hey, what are your thoughts on Sam's play, Fresh?
You know what? I talked to our guy, friend of the show and family, B Dragon, a lot during games.
Uh-huh.
And he made a great point. His mid-range game is nice. And those little turnarounds.
Lost art, yeah.
It really is, but they're really nice. And it's, you know, again, the way the game is now, we always talk about it. You want him to come in and make 7 threes a game and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he's got some crafty shit going on when he catches it back to the basket or just mid-range. And he looked like Big Smooth last night. So,
yeah, I hope they post him up at least 7-8 times a game. He's great.
I mean, let's just post everybody up. That's the UVA's five, what do we call it? Let's run a 4-post scenario.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam.
Everybody's getting in the post.
Everybody's posting up.
So, up next, yeah, Clemson. That's a big test.
Sounds like it. Huh?
Yeah, they're a great team. I mean, have picked them to win it all. So, at least to win the ACC.
Are we going there? Or they're coming to JPJ.
Well, hold on, T-Dubs. Did he pick them to win, or did he pick them as the number one team so far right now?
I think it's number one team so far. That's fair. Yeah, then his power ranking, so to speak, whatever that is. I think we're going there, right?
I think so.
I wish I would have been involved in that. I had a lot to say about the game in real time. I couldn't jump on.
And we put up 80 points against a mid-level ACC foe. That's tremendous. I mean, normally those outings like that are reserved for you know, mid-majors and overtime games.
We've also had a couple games, though, right, where we've given up 40-plus and a half, which is
unheard of.
Unheard of.
Yeah. And
Wait a minute, Phony. Phony, wait, I got a question for you. Are you calling Notre Dame a mid-level ACC team?
I mean, I'm trying to be generous. I'm a big Mike Bray fan.
Yeah, at the bottom right now.
All right, but they haven't won an ACC game yet.
Right, their record doesn't indicate it. I just look at the talent and the coaching of that team, and you know, I know. And Braves was struggling, and a lot of fans want him gone, and I hate that because
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of fans have turned on him because his recruiting has really fallen off for one thing, and you know that seems to have impacted the level of play. But I just think he's a really smart coach, and you know these days he dresses like a stockbroker that's been on a 3-day bender after getting laid off for making some very poor trades, and I love it. And I would hate to see him go.
Is that a subtle shot at Fresno, Tony?
What's that?
Is that a subtle shot at me there?
No. I thought
it's right up my alley. You know, I'll tell you what, with Bray, and I have really grown to like him. He was an assistant at Duke when I played. And the assistants, you kind of were like, you know, unless they were players you followed, like Tommy Amaker, you're just like, okay, whatever. But for me, I came back from Brazil, he kind of fell into the seat at Notre Dame. And I've been impressed, man.
Yeah.
And the more I've gotten to know him with the Wooten connection, the Ted Jeffries connection, coaching him in high school, he's an awesome guy to hear speak. But I'll say, watching him last night, it feels like he's just like kind of like giving up. And to your point, Phony, the way he looked, and you know, he's not fiery with the players, and he's being nice, I think, a little bit, and he's kind of like resigned to like whatever happens. And at some point to the players, and I think he knows it and realizes it's not fair either, right? Like, let's get somebody else. So, and he's talked about retiring, right? That's like a known thing.
Has he? I don't even know how old.
Yeah,
he is.
I've heard him talk. Dougie, about
I gotta good. I gotta agree with you on that because I watched them a lot last year, and I've watched probably 4 or 5 of their games this year, maybe more.
Yeah.
Last year, I started noticing that it was just like he's resigned. He's just like, okay, this is what I have. If we win, we win. And it's almost like his expectations are low, and he's not setting himself up for failure because he knows he doesn't have the top players, and he knows he's not getting the top players.
There's no fire. That's what I've noticed. So, and I try to watch a lot of things that nobody watches. I don't try to. That's what I do because I don't know. No, I'm not sure why.
Because
I kind of notice these things, yeah. You know, I'm still trying to find Junior Burrow in the stands during the game. That's all I really care about. section 113, row C, seat 1.
The last good players he had was the 2016-2017 season.
You know who it was? Was the pitcher who plays for the Bucks?
No, that was after him. After
Connaughton.
He had
I never knew his name.
Bonzi.
You know him.
Wasn't Jeremy Grant? Guard.
No, the Jeremy Grant was Jersey. Clemson.
What's that?
Oh, okay.
He had like the 6-foot white guard from Jersey. And then Gibbs was pretty good too. But the Bonzi, what's his name, from Massachusetts?
Yeah, he was great.
I want to say Bonzi Wells, but I'm not sure if that's
right. No, it wasn't Bonzi Wells. Remember in the 2016-2017 ACC tournament?
He was incredible.
Bonzi bumped in. He was really good. He bumped into Tony Bennett and kind of pushed him.
Oh, I do.
Remember that.
He had a big night. It was Dev's senior night, right? He had a huge game against us.
We beat them.
But he had like 28.
Are we going to talk about Jay Huff's charge? Or am I ruining the?
No. Let's talk about it. We haven't talked about Jay Huff. That's the one guy with two career highs in a row. Come on now.
Somebody sent a tweet today, which was incredible. So Jay gets knocked down, and I love Jay in the interview afterwards. He was like, I haven't taken a charge ever in high school or college. I don't look to take charges. And that was me. But I'm like, if you're going to knock me down, I'm playing good defense and you knock me down, it's a charge, fine. But I'm not like flopping.
Right.
But if you watch, if we can find this video, this tweet, TW, everybody on the team descended on him.
Yeah.
Including the coaches. And I think Coach Bennett was trying to be the guy to pick him up and, you know, say good job. But everybody else, it was like, whatever that looks
Everybody
like.
Everybody was in shock that he took a charge.
Well, yeah, you never expect to put one guy to take a charge outside.
That's a pillar. That's a unity pillar, I think, Marky.
Yeah. I think Ty could have taken that charge.
Yeah. I don't think that was even a charge. It was just – I mean, him taking a charge. It was the guy just plowed over.
Right. That's like you walked across the street and a Big Mac truck hit you, and that was it.
But it's hard for a guy Jay size to get that call, though.
He's in position.
Yeah.
Also, like, I. Yeah, well, he's like,
refs are.
He was out by the 3-point line doing something. He's probably hard. He's probably like imagining he was hard hedging something and the guy just ran into him. So
Jay Huff, when we talk about be aggressive, be consistent, and he's done that a couple games now. He's played, two career highs in a row is nothing to,
He's all, every time I look too afterwards at the stats, and I don't watch stats during games, maybe the next day, but he's like a 22 minute a game guy.
Yeah.
He's not getting, I've never seen him play 30 minutes,
Foul trouble.
Yeah. His foul rate has been problematic, and that's a little bit worrisome moving forward because he'd improved his, over the course of his first 3 years, his foul rate had gone down every year, but now this year it's high again, at least in conference play. And
Right. Can
afford to have him sitting, especially when Caden's out. Kafaro is doing the same things that Caden does so far.
If this is the portion where we can be a little critical of the players, then I'll say being out of position for him leads to the fouls, and that's probably led to a lot of the not a lot of minutes too early, right? Being out of position on the edges and recovery. Da, da, da. We talk about it over and over, but like a lot of the fouls are he's a little behind on a play and he tries to make it up by being aggressive on trying to get a block or coming from behind, and he gets a foul call.
That's something with UVA big men under Coach Bennett the last however many years that we've all become so spoiled to. Again, I talk about Akil and Darius being able to guard four plays in one play, four people in one play.
Right.
We think that's just normal. It's just not.
Akil Mitchell was like a cheat code. I mean, the way he guarded the pick and roll.
It was unbelievable. I'd see him guard four different places and then recovered back to his original man who was wide open and the guy had no chance. So that was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out John Rothstein on that.
Hey, I got a question for you, Phony.
Sure.
Sorry, T-Dubs, were you done?
No, go ahead.
T-Dubs, by the way, the audience can't see you, but the image on your camera is incredible.
With the lighting?
With the lighting and from the sun?
Yeah, the sun coming
through the shade?
It looks like I'm in a like club.
I think the word is translucent.
It looks like, how would you describe that, Coach? Or Dougie?
I'll tell you what it is. He's in one of those 1980s hotel showers that are translucent. You can sort of see.
Yeah, right. If I put my hand over the then it goes away.
It is incredible.
What an incredible shot from this sunny California. Wow, Coach, what was Twitter like? What's the worst they've been on Casey?
I mean, I haven't seen the worst. Everyone I think has been pretty positive on Casey so far.
Yeah. Last year, I'm sorry. Let's go back to last year.
Last year, I don't remember too many people really being down on him like they've been down on Kihei, every time he misses a shot. I mean, I think there may have been some frustration, but a lot of it is just, I think, feeling sorry for him because everyone knows the kid knows how to shoot, and he's got the body, he's got the skills to play at this level. And then when it's not happening, I don't remember a lot of people, at least the folks that I follow and I interact with, being too negative on him. It's just really frustrating. And there've been some, you gotta sit him, but if a guy's missing all the shots, you probably do need to sit him, but nothing too bad. And I mean, it was positively jubilant looking back at Twitter during this last Notre Dame game, just seeing him hitting those shots and, making all the moves and playing really confidently. I mean, people are happy for him. It's not just us. I mean, people are excited to see this kid be successful with us.
I get it. I hear you. And I agree. I just, as T-Dub says, people almost like to dislike Kihei, and I don't get it.
It's the height. People think basketball, you got to be tall. There's he has no business being out there because he's not 6'7". And that's it, right? I think the reverse is true for Jay. He's 7 foot. He's tall. He's supposed to be nothing he could do is wrong because he's 7 foot tall. That's how I look at it.
T-Dubs, is that everything you think?
That's a big part of it. I mean, I'll add race into there too, but I think perception is everything for a lot of like the casual fan. You just see a guy that's shorter and you immediately assume he's not good at basketball. And you see a guy who's 7 feet and he hits a three, you're like, he's God.
I didn't think he was great his first year, and I was critical of him at times. And I also was high on him against – we don't beat Auburn without him. We probably don't beat Oregon without him, right? He defended the smaller, really good guards fairly well. Yeah. I don't think it would have mattered in against against Purdue, right? Just he was what's the Carson Edwards was going to score on anybody. He was going to score on Michael Jordan. He was going to score on
he was on whoever that
day. But I don't know who else makes that pass at the end.
That's right. Who makes that pass, the perfect pass? But maybe we're not in that situation if he's in the game or if he's not in the game, rather. Right.
My criticisms against him have been very specific, and it's the driving the lane with no plan B. And there have been games, unfortunately haven't happened in a while, where he seems to feel the need to take over. And I get that because especially some games early this season, we didn't have anyone else stepping up. But when he has to take over as our primary scoring option, we're already in a really bad position. And, you know, now he just seems to be making such better decisions. And he, when he drives, he's got options and he's been choosing the right option almost every time. So.
Yeah, well, clearly he's listening to you, your criticism.
Right. Right. I keep tagging him in the tweets. And I don't even know if he's on Twitter. I don't even tweet too much about him. I just, you know, might mumble under my breath that, I wish. Yeah, I think maybe one time I tweeted that he needs to have a plan B whenever he drives. And
he heard that because now he's got a plan B.
Right. He does.
Coaching is so easy.
He probes. He gets to the basket. If he doesn't have something, he probes and probes and probes and finds the right guy, right?
Yeah.
Dougie, by the way, I did notice what you're talking about.
Thank you.
You talk about him passing the ball.
Yeah.
Passes. Like it's like a left-hand lead.
It's a left-hand lead. It's like the follow-through is lefty. Like if anybody in the world that knows basketball watched him only chest basketball, they would think he was left-handed.
I will say though, his first year, I agree. Like there were times where it felt like the other team would just the other team's guard. I think it was a couple of games where they would just attack him and shoot over him, and that was frustrating, right? And it didn't feel like he had the ability to hit shots over people or get by and finish. So there was definitely some of that first year, but he's made up for it big time.
Yeah. I think if he stays within his game and just really stays in that floor general mindset, you know, he doesn't have to be the one making the kill, but he's going to make sure we're in the right position. And if he does that, we're successful.
I've been impressed and surprised by him and so far the body of work and his what he's doing to lead the team and not try to be a 20-point scorer, so to speak, or a 12-point scorer. He's doing the right things. Like he takes very few threes, which I thought I suspected he would come into this year being like, nobody's gonna replace me. I'll shoot as many threes as I want. But he's really not, man. He's really adjusted his game in a lot of ways. The adjustment with the dribbling to the driving and maintaining his dribble happened last year. He got away from it a little bit this year, but you know, he's not getting his shot blocked by somebody's elbow anymore like he used to constantly on a layup.
Dougie, what's his ceiling?
About 5'10 and a half. Right? I think he'll probably get another inch and a half in next year. Kihei's ceiling, in terms of like, you know, he might sneak us and be like second team all ACC next year.
Okay, but like after he finishes his time at UVA,
NBA, can he make the league?
No, he has no chance in NBA.
Really?
No, his three takes a long time. It's a squat a little bit. It's gotten better. He has no chance in NBA. So if he makes the NBA, I might just get it back together and come back. And that's nothing against Kihei. He'll find. I mean, it depends on. It's all about what he wants to do, man.
Summer league. Will he make a summer league roster?
Define make. Will he be invited? Sure.
Yeah, you know, that's what I mean. Not I mean summer league. Will he play in the summer league?
I mean, anybody. You could play in the summer league, TW. Who cares? But I mean, sure.
Wait,
I bet. I don't know. Ask the father of an NBA player. I don't know anything about.
Wait, Dougie, did you say he play in a summer league or he could play in the summer league? What was your answer? In a summer league, like a pro-am summer league, or the
You know, like the Lawyers League in New York City.
Oh, no, I'm talking about.
No, dude, Kihei's great. He's a very skilled player, man. But it's like,
I think he has an outside shot at it. I don't know, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but
at making the NBA.
Yeah, At least like an early roster, getting a two-way, getting a shot.
I mean, I hope so.
I mean, I just look at historically, there's always been, you know, people take chances with it. Earl Boykin's another shorter superstar.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just gonna ask you. Let's look at the different. Top. Let's look at the top small guards: Bud Webb, Earl Boykins.
All right. Yeah. Well, how about go back to Earl Boykins' college.
He was incredible.
College stats.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. It's just, you know.
He was a rare breed. Muggsy, obviously. Muggsy Bogues, David Stoudemire.
Well, I'm pretty sure Muggsy is why Tony recruits these guys.
Yeah, probably.
They play together, right?
Yeah. Talked about it. Yeah.
Chris, have you guys seen the kid Chris Clemens who plays in the Rockets?
Mm-hmm. No, is he little?
Oh man, yeah, he's like 5'9".
Oh yeah.
I think he scored 2,000 points in college.
Exactly, but
he was so good. He was ridiculously good in college. Right. And I saw him in Summer League, T-Dubs, when we were out there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, let's say Kihei, and I'm not – this is not at all bashing. Like, dude, Kihei won a championship. But I'm saying if Kihei Clark went to – name a lower-level college, where was he going to go to college in the beginning?
Santa Clara, T-Dubs?
UC Davis.
Yeah, he's not averaging 20 points at UC Davis.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But, I mean no, JJ, that's right. JJ, let's keep going now. JJ Barea is another one.
Yeah,
that turned out to be incredible. Chioza is now in the league.
Chioza is a two-way.
Yeah, exactly. He is
so fast.
He is incredible.
So fast, right?
So and he's not extremely fast, man. He's not overly fast. He's faster than me.
He's fast. He's really fast. I don't know if he's Chioza fast.
He's not fast like these guys.
Yeah.
Purdue, he chased down that ball, so I don't know how many people could have done that.
I want nothing more than to see him make the league, because if he makes the league, it will mean he led us to another championship. Like, that's what
he has a chance to lead to be one of the greatest point guards, right? In Virginia history, if he goes to another Final Four or gets another title, there's no one's gonna be able to top that.
My only thing about T Dubs is like, okay, he's making — what did he get last year? Second team All ACC or third team?
Nothing. Did he? I don't think he got any.
No chance.
But here's the thing. Again, if you measure the level of play in the ACC right now compared to when Doug played, and even compared to 2 or 3 years ago, and from 2 years ago going back, all the way back, right, the ACC was really good 2 years ago. Right? Zion and Duke and North Carolina was pretty good. They had – North Carolina had – 2 or 3 NBA players, right, as first years or freshmen.
Always, right?
They were good. And they had Cam Johnson, who was a fifth-year player. They had a good team. And they did well in the tournament. And you look at some of the other teams in the ACC, right? Duke, UVA, Carolina, Virginia Tech was good. Louisville was good, right? You look at all those teams. Those teams were good. All those teams would have won the ACC this year.
And those guards on BC, not a good team, but those guards were NBA dudes, ballers.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
And you look at the ACC now, how many NBA guys are there this year?
I don't know. Yeah,
very weak. It's definitely a weaker league, but that's not his fault. I'm just saying.
No, it's not his fault, but I think you take that into consideration when you talk about the best PG point guards at UVA.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's going to come down to hardware, right? Long, long term, when you look back, if he gets us to 2 Final Fours, and he's the, you know, point guards on that, he's going to go down. Now, I'm not saying the greatest.
No, I know. That's certainly one way to measure it.
Yeah.
How about we do one time a podcast, Ricky Stokes or Kihei Clark?
Ooh.
Just a podcast on that.
Was Ricky Stokes a 4-year starter? I mean, because Key actually has the potential now.
Ricky Stokes was in the Final Four. I know that much.
Yeah, I think he was.
I mean, but Key will have the potential to be a 5-year starter for this team.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. And he's got the best shot.
Playing like 43 minutes a game. Like, he can really amass some stats.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think he's heavy on the stats. He's definitely heavy on the minutes.
Nobody in TV era is heavy on stats.
So. I would kill for the minutes that Kihei gets. Good for him. And he's earned them. He's earned every second of it. So,
all right, we'll move on. Next topic.
Please tell me it's Reese.
Virginia women's basketball will not complete the remainder of 2020-2021 due to health and safety concerns. Big news. This was actually trending everywhere because I mean this just came out today, but it's a big announcement. What are our thoughts?
I feel bad for the players, the kids. You know, you choose to go to a school and you want to play. There's something hit me, my conspiracy side a little bit. I wonder if this has anything to do with funding. And I doubt it. I doubt it.
Because Duke also canceled their women's basketball season.
Yeah, I wonder if it has. I don't know, but I couldn't speculate at all. I just feel bad for the players and staff, et cetera, that that's what they live for, and they got a season stolen from them. So,
well, it's tough, and it was a winless season, right? 0-5. Ooh,
I didn't know that.
The only thing is, if you're a fourth year, fifth year,
you can come back.
You can come back, right? And maybe you can get an additional year of your education paid for, right? So maybe if you want to do grad school, or if you finish 3 years, if you got your degree in 3 years and you're working on your grad school or your grad education on your fourth year, and now you get a fifth year.
Okay, that's fair.
But it's still, if you decide you don't want to come back and you're like, oh man, this was my senior season. This is my last year, my fourth year.
It's tough. Right. This begs the question, is Tina Thompson going to be here moving forward? That a subject people are talking about, Phony? Is it?
Yeah, I mean, the folks that I know are talking about it, and I certainly there seem to be a lot of folks that hope she doesn't. I mean, you know, all I can judge on is the results and really her social media presence, and neither of those make me think that she's the right person for Virginia. I mean, she's, you know, most of her tweets are about how she's in the Hall of Fame. And I mean, she had some tweets earlier, like
at
last
Duke, season,
to go to the Duke game. And it just, you know, it really comes across like the fact that she's the coach of Virginia basketball is secondary to everything else in her life. And the results on the court don't contradict that at all.
I mean, how many big-time Hall of Fame players have gone on to become great coaches? I mean, it's like
– oh, great question.
It's not – there's not a ton. I mean, Steve Kerr, maybe not the greatest. Does he count as an elite player? Yeah, I think – I would say so. Steve Kerr.
He's not Hall of Fame.
He's not Hall of Fame level like this. I mean, Phil Jackson, was he a Hall of Fame basketball player?
I don't think so.
No.
Then absolutely. Remember when Magic Johnson,
Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, Larry Bird got to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple times. He was, but
did Bill Russell win one as a coach or not?
Yeah, he was a coach player, first ever coach player.
Bill, I mean, that guy. Yeah, he's
an anomaly.
He's
an alien.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, how many great? It's hard, right? And maybe there's something there that's like when you're at that player level that elite, it doesn't translate to coaching. I don't know.
Well, and obviously, I mean, I spend a lot of time on social media. There's nothing about Virginia basketball, I believe, listed in Tina Thompson's Twitter profile. It lists her location, Los Angeles, California. And if you read her tweets, you're probably gonna have to scroll through a lot to find one about Virginia. Her Instagram description does list that, like, fourth after all her other accolades.
There you go. It says Dylan's mom at the moment.
You know, and it's just you just don't get the impression that this is someone who is committed. And I don't necessarily, I'm not one that enjoys seeing coaches talk about how they spend 80 or 100 hours a week or more as a coach. I believe in work-life balance. I don't think that's something that should be celebrated, devoting all your time to something. But I think if you're the coach of a Division I women's basketball team, that's probably something you should put in your bio. And from a recruiting standpoint, I mean, what are you going to think if you look this coach up on Twitter, that if she's not proud enough of her team, how are you going to be proud enough to play there?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, do you think, Fresh, do you think there's something to that? The ego of an elite basketball player is going to have a hard time translating to at least a college coach.
I'm not sure if it's ego. There's a certain thing of I've already – you know, coaches that didn't do that stuff are maybe hungrier, and so they want to make their mark as a coach.
Right.
If you're a player, I made my mark, and either you guys can figure it out or you can't. And they might not be able to relate. Like, how does Larry Bird, Magic Johnson relate to guys who aren't as good as them? Like, the way I did it, it just happened.
Right.
Because I worked harder than anybody else and whatever, so maybe I think they can't really understand it and communicate it because they have a little bit of that syndrome. There's a name for it. I forgot what it is.
So, yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, because you could also argue, all right, if you got to becoming the best player ever is by working hard as hell, right, harder than everyone, and now you're in coaching, you'd probably wouldn't you just also think I got to work harder than everybody to become the greatest coach, or do you just think I'm a great player?
I'm not sure players know how to work hard as a coach.
As a coach, right? Well,
that's fair. I talked about Buzz. Who's the guy for Texas A&M? Buzz Peterson.
Buzz Williams.
Whoever. Buzz Williams. Look up his history. The guy was like, he's been everywhere in every gym, just hanging out, grinding, trying to figure it out, X and O, and doing things, and he ends up a real coach.
Yeah, one of the smartest guys in the game.
Yeah, John Calipari's story is nothing to do with being a great basketball player. Everything to do with being around the game and players and stuff. So,
that begs the question: Don Staley, Hall of Famer, greatest player in Virginia history, also incredible coach. So,
all right, I guess, well, that's to your point. How about that? She might again have another award as being the best Hall of Fame player and the best coach, the only one, literally.
It's a tough one. I mean, right? Because like when you become a great player, do you want to continue down that path? Right? It's kind of a grind, right?
For sure.
I guess the other ones that would be Penny Hardaway, TBD, Juwan Howard, TBD. Yep. Doc Rivers, was he considered elite?
Doc was
an elite player. You could argue elite because he's got championships. All right, there's one.
Mark Jackson.
Ewing, not doing so well.
Yeah.
Chris Mullin, not doing so well.
I think Rick Barry tried it. Paul Westfall might be the goal. He just passed away, RIP.
Rick Carlisle. I mean, he wasn't an elite NBA player, but. Yeah. Great NBA coach, I guess.
Won a championship.
It's a small list. It's a small list.
I feel coaching, like, obviously, he's a very good coach if he chose to.
Who?
LeBron.
LeBron.
No. No chance.
No.
No.
LeBron is a coach? Hell no. No.
I don't know. He seems to be more of a student of the game than.
No. No, for sure. But he's no chance he's a coach. No way.
His mind is great. His basketball mind is incredible.
Oh, of course.
I can't see him coaching.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think
we'll see with Steve Nash now.
I don't think he's got the patience to sustain like a regular season game as a player.
Yeah.
I watch him play sometimes and he's just like bored. He's just like, okay, whatever. Maybe I'm going to try now. Maybe not. I watched him play last night. I watched him play Oklahoma City. He was like, okay, maybe I'm going to take this play off. I'll play this play and walk up the court sometimes. And he's still so dominant when he plays like that.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to be so into it as a coach, that's why I felt like Chris Mullin was. I felt like Chris Mullin wasn't so passionate.
Oh, yeah.
You
watched him. He was like Mike Bray, right? Mike Bray has been over the last couple of years.
It's almost like they've gotten to that level and they're just like, I'm better than this. Like, I don't need to put up with this anymore. I don't know.
It feels like to me, too, especially college.
Yeah. It's like, I don't care about this. And ultimately, it's not where their passion lies, which is. It is what it is, I guess.
You'd like imagine James Harden being a coach.
All right, well.
Y'all go play. Y'all go play, man. Call me after the game.
Some of the stories I have, like not even that. Yeah, we don't need to practice. Go hang out.
All right.
We'll be all right.
By the way, Vernon Maxwell had a great tweet today about that, if you guys saw.
No.
Yeah.
What did Matt Max say?
He said, the beard should take out a full page, Houston Chronicle article or what's it called? Advertisement. There you go. Thanking all the dancers in Houston for the last 8 years.
Yeah. He said, if I'm the beard, I'm taking a page out in the Houston Observer, thanking all the dancers in town for the last 8 years.
Was he there 8 years, by the way?
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. That's time flies.
Oh, my gosh. Flies.
All right, the next one. Man, still on the women's basketball note, Asia Wilson, South Carolina. They erected a statue of her.
Who's that?
Asia Wilson.
Who is it?
South Carolina best women's player.
Recently?
Yeah.
Wow, good for her.
How cool is that?
22.
She's 22 and has a statue.
No, no, it just says her.
No, her username is Aja Wilson 22.
I misled you on that.
So that leads the question: when is the Don Staley statue coming in Charlottesville? Like,
there should be one.
How is there not one? Who do we need to talk to?
Ralph have one?
Lure there. Yeah, Ralph doesn't have a statue, right?
Ralph doesn't have a statue.
I don't know if they do statues unless you are. Well, I don't want to say it, but
yeah, don't let's not go with the statue route, but let's talk about getting Don and Ralph.
We need people mending fences with Don right now, and we need some alums together a truck full of cash.
A solid gold statue is fine. Totally fine. It'll
make sense. And we tell her if you come here, you can take that home with you. That's yours.
That's officially yours.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any chance she's leaving.
No, I've given up on that, but you know, it's kind of like winning that $1 billion Powerball or whatever. You know it's not going to happen, but sometimes you can't help but think, what if?
You hope. All right, this next tweet.
Would love a Brian Skate statue.
NBA Central tweeted DeAndre Hunter this season: 16.3 points per game, 6.8 rebounds, 51% field goal, 43 from three, 85 free throw. Incredible.
Trajectory is nuts, man.
What's he going to get paid?
Convexity.
What's he going to get paid after next year?
Is he a max player? Max player?
He's the most consistent player on that team.
He is. He's the best player on that team, I think. I forget. I mean,
I think he'll be a notch below the max. Or is it am I wrong?
Yeah.
He'll be the highest paid player in Virginia history.
I'll tell you who's gonna come after him. Golden State, if they have the same GM. That's my prediction.
I'd be very happy with that.
Yeah, that's my prediction.
A fit for that.
TW's universe just comes together.
Yeah, seriously. I'm going to every game.
Yeah, and I actually looked at that today, and so he's got the 18th best true shooting percentage in the NBA so far this season. Joe Harris is at 16. Two UVA players in the top 20, and it makes me happy because there's a lot of Atlanta fans that weren't happy with that pick. They thought it was a reach. They didn't, for whatever reason, they're not a fan because he's not a guy that demands to be an alpha. I think Atlanta knew what they were doing when they picked him up, that's the kind of player that they wanted, and he's showing that they made a good decision with that this season.
And on this, the next one, our trending topic, is going to be about sports cards. I was going to tell Mark, remember we talked about investing in DeAndre Hunter cards at one point? They've tripled in value since we've had that conversation.
Crazy. Well, you know what, T-Dubs, he's going to get paid a lot of money. Is it too late?
No, I don't know. We should. So here's the next one. I was curious to get Fresh's take on this. A 1952 Mickey Mantle card sold for $5.2 million the other day at auction. And then Yahoo Finance did a thing. They took the top 500 sports cards and tracked them year over year. And every year they have outperformed the S&P 500. Is that crazy?
Yeah, it's
every year just, since 19,
there's,
I think,
there's
since
too 19, much free money. There's bubbles everywhere. Really, really, really rich people buy Bitcoin for $40,000 and not even think about it. They don't, doesn't matter. It's more like $5.2 million for me to go to my death and doesn't even matter. It's like, I'd rather have this card than, you know, feed kids. So,
yeah, they were showing year over year, not just like, okay, starting now year, like over the course of the year, it has the 500 top whatever sports cards continue to outperform. That's a crazy thought. Like,
yeah, do you guys remember the tulips in
Sweden
or somewhere, wherever it was? That this is one of those things.
But this is now, but this is now 50 years of that though. Fresh, you really think?
Well,
suddenly,
yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, like the Yahoo Finance thing went back to 1970.
So all the kids, all of us kids paying 25 cents had it figured out, and all I cared about was a stick of gum.
Right. If somebody's reading that Yahoo article who had one of those Mickey Mantle cards as a kid and stuck it in the spokes of his bicycle.
Right. I mean, that's how it always starts, right? When I was a kid, that was the story, right? Oh, somebody found the Mickey Mantle in their attic, and it's worth a fortune. And now I'm reading people finding a Pokemon card in their attic, and it's worth something similar, and it's starting a new – like this – I don't know. Does this thing not go away? Because
collectibles are just weird. Pokemon, Magic the Gathering cards. I mean, there's
sports cards
stuff for a piece of paper. I guess that makes any more or less sense than spending that money on a rock that came out of the ground. But
yeah, they're saying that these companies are going to do microtransactions. They're buying up a lot of these, and they're going to allow people to invest in a little piece of a Michael Jordan rookie. You know, you can spend $10 and get a piece of a Michael Jordan rookie, and that's going to prolong this thing, right? So these houses are going to own corner of the market, and then they're going to sell you tiny portions of it and create a stock market out of things, and then it is real. Like then it's going to be really hard to deny the actual value of this thing.
It's like you can buy parts of Bitcoin now.
Yeah, I mean that. I think
that also becomes a thing where you can get in, but you can't. Can you get out? Because right. That's fine. You paid blah, 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 whatever percent, and you have a tenth, and it's worth this, it's worth this, it's worth this, and you're like, okay, I want to cash out. Where's the liquidity?
I think
like,
if they do a
if
micro...
20 people don't want to sell, it's right. Not like a secondary market, but whatever, I'm a hater.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. I don't know. I was curious to get your take on it, considering.
Yeah, well, it's funny to talk back to Bitcoin. I read an article and true or not, some guy had, I don't know, $100 million worth of Bitcoin from years ago. Mm-hmm. And he had two guesses left as to his password for his
code. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
You can see that. The number might not be 100. It might be 5. Yeah. It might be
it's
whatever.
It's 10 guesses, and he's got two left.
So I have a friend. I have an actual friend of a friend who had Bitcoin from way back. Not gazillions of dollars, but a lot of money. And he knew his password was from some movie, and he's a big analytics guy, right? So he had his computer running the analytics of every possible thing you could say from that movie for like 48 hours.
Did he figure it out?
Just sending it, and never figured it out. Actually, the guy ended up doing my old job.
So the money's gone?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, if you get locked out, it's gone. If you get locked out, it's gone.
Yeah.
But can I say one thing? I had 17 cents in Bitcoin that I bought ages ago that I couldn't cash out because it was not enough money. Today, that's worth 400 and some dollars.
There it is. That explains it right there.
I looked the other day. I was like, I was like, maybe I should buy some of this. And I looked, and I'm like, why do I have $400? And I had 17 cents in there, whatever, like when this thing started. How crazy is that? Anyway, imagine if you had a few grand in there.
By the way, I used to always get, because I was a baseball card guy, not basketball or football when I was little. I used to always get the most badass Willie McCovey cards.
Oh, nice.
Mark,
big lefty.
McCovey's Cove.
Whatever card it was, he was just staring it down like he's about to launch something 600 feet into like some river. I always loved Willie McCovey.
I mean,
I was a San Francisco Giant fan. I was born in San Francisco.
And so I'd read the back too, like home runs, 472.
Whatever. I mean, cards are not going anywhere, I guess. Mark, I need to. The other piece on the card thing was all these current guys today, the value is so like Luke, you know, we talked about this last time, Luca, and they continue to go up. It makes no sense, but
I'm sending my $50 tonight.
Let's just invest. All right. And the last one I got today, YouTube trending. This trailer, have you seen it?
I did.
I haven't seen the actual trailer yet. I just knew they were coming out with it.
Coming to America, part 2.
I mean, it's so weird that those guys don't look any older than they
do. No, I was just going to say,
they
don't age.
Like, how is... I'm so pissed at them.
Amazon Prime. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. That's the number one trending thing in YouTube movies.
I love that first movie. I'm a huge fan of...
Same here.
The original. I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen it. So
that's such a good movie.
That'll definitely be a must watch for me. You know, Eddie Murphy was, I mean, he was such an inspiration for me from a stand-up standpoint. I never tried to emulate him or anything, but he's the one that made me want to do stand-up comedy. He was so good. And I've heard talk that he might be coming back.
Okay.
And that would be really cool to see because he was one of those guys that could just control a room like no one else.
I'll say I tried to watch Raw the other day. That was my favorite one as a kid. It doesn't stand up very well.
No, and today. You know, I recently watched Raw and Delirious.
Yes.
And they did not age well.
No.
And I was like, there were a lot of moments where I was kind of cringing, and so he'd need to come in with a lot of new material. But I mean, as far as a performer, he's
the best,
and I would love to see him come back and obviously kind of update it for more modern sensibilities.
That was part of his stick, though, like pushing the edge and back then. So, you know, I think he could do it again. It might be a shock to a lot of people to hear that kind of talk again. But
yeah, so much of it is just so, it's like, oh, come on. did he use that word?
Did he go there?
Right. And I'm like, oh, I forgot about that bit. Yeah, And, you know, so maybe he just, maybe he's just not cut out for it anymore. But just, you know, from a delivery and timing standpoint.
Incredible.
And all that, he's just one of the best.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll add a Netflix trending to our Focus Corner thing for what's trending on Netflix every once in a while. Seems like.
Yeah, I'm running out of stuff to watch. Really cool. Just finish the Good Place.
Yeah, let's start adding that in there. What's because I know there's another crime documentary that came out today that's trending on Netflix.
Which one?
Some kind of LA serial killer documentary. Ooh. Apparently it's really good. I don't know. I go down those rabbit holes when I, you know, whatever, the Golden State Killer. I think I read way more than I needed to on that, but whatever. It's fascinating somehow.
There was a good story on that on Netflix with the woman journalist.
Yeah.
That was really good.
That's the one that got me. And I was like reading articles, and then they caught the guy not that long after that, which is like.
Yep. That was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was really good. And her husband is a famous actor.
Yeah. Comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah. He finished the book. And then it released, and then. Yeah, apparently that haunted her. That's what killed her. She was so haunted by him and her fight to find him that she mixed up prescription drugs because she was having insomnia from it and nightmares. And she was taking sleeping med, and she overdosed and died. And it was directly because of the work on that.
Was that Patton Oswalt's wife?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she passed away from the research of this guy, this book, that she was so haunted by those stories of, you know, the guy showing up. And you know, it's pretty scary when you think about it, like, especially at that time, like, masked guy breaks into your house, you know, ties you up. That's like the stuff of nightmares. It's like the modern day Jack the Ripper.
But Patton also was local. Patton went to William & Mary.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. I did a workshop with him back in probably like 96.
Oh, wow.
I was not good then. he's a super nice guy. Like the way he comes across is just, he was a good dude. So
that's great.
I knew his wife had passed away. I didn't know that story. That's awful.
It's a great way to end this week's Focus Corner. The Hold death on. Of I'm kidding. Minute, that is a
Let's
terrible
end on a happier note.
Yes,
a happier note.
For right? sure.
The story that's out in USU, Utah State Statesman.com that features one of our former UVA Hoos.
Yes, Marco.
Marco, who's playing really, really well.
Absolutely.
Right. And he's getting a lot of positive comments from the UVA Hoos page. So real, so happy for him.
Yeah, such a, so
he's
happy
like
for
the
him.
Nicest, most gentle kid ever. Yeah.
So funny.
Right.
And so nice.
He did everything the program asked of him, you know, and he got a championship for his troubles. I mean, you can't be anything but happy for a guy like that.
A hard worker. I mean, Ty always said he worked super hard and they loved him. So pretty such cool. Nice pretty cool to such see him. Nice I hope he's still wearing the Crocs.
His parents were also so nice too.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I told him I was gonna come when he played San Jose State, but then because of the pandemic. But once we open back up, I definitely want to catch a game. Shout out, Marco.
Yeah. All right, we can end now.
All right. That was a great one. All right, fellas. Till next week.
Later, guys.
Goes.